everyone. Welcome to the second edition of Road to Cheltenham. We are back on Zoom as advertised, and that means, Ruby, you're in the comfort of your own home.
I am, Lydia, cutting down on the carbon footprint, but I do notice I got a fancy microphone and you didn't.
This is clearly favouritism. Where is my microphone? You know, that's just not on.
I know, yeah. Gender equality, et cetera, et cetera. Or maybe I have to deal with the reality that I'm difficult to understand and you're not.
I doubt that. Maybe they think you're more important. No, it can't be that. I'll try not to think about it during the course of the show. I'm going to sort of obscure it from my vision. One thing I did want to talk to you about was the impact of the weather on the season, because we saw some very small fields at Cheltenham at the weekend, and I'm assume it's having the same impact on races across the grades in Ireland too.
Yeah, it is, and it's even maiden hurdles, beginners chases, etc. Horses need to get out and run in maidens and beginners to have a pool of winners to take each other on in novices, and the further back they get to run in the maidens, the closer it gets to Christmas, the less you're going to have in novices at that meeting. So it is having a knock-on effect. And it's not just as simple as rain on Thursday morning and everybody run on Saturday. It needs to rain for them to gallop, school, and then run the following week. So it's not a one-day problem. We need rain and we need quite a bit of it.
Yeah, Nicky Henderson was making the point that at the Ladbrokes Winter Carnival gallop morning at Newbury earlier this week, that enabled him to work his horses on grass, which he hadn't been able to do at home, which is obvious once he says it out loud. But, you know, I didn't really appreciate the full effect that it was having.
Yeah, it is. And look, even in Willys, it's wood chip, and obviously wood chip retains the moisture as well. So, you know, there's two big yards that have been affected in different ways.
But nonetheless, we did have some excellent action over the weekend, didn't we? And we're going to start by having a look at the two-mile chasers first off, and see what we made of the Schlur Chase. Now, Put the Kettle On, who's the reigning Queen Mother Champion Chase winner, was back. She won the Schlur Chase this time last year. She was up against three opponents, Rouge Vif, Nubi Negra and Politologue. Now, what did you make of this race, Ruby? It saw Nubi Negra emerge as quite an exciting prospect for this year's Champion Chase.
Yeah, it did. Look, and it wasn't as tactical as the Champion Chase. Politologue said he stalled out good and early, went and jumped the first and went a good gallop. Rouge Vif was a bit keen and he pulled his way from the back to the front. But I think they kind of went possibly a bit quick for Put the Kettle On her first start. But it really suited Nubi Negra, who was able to sit right in behind. And Harry Skelton completely bided his time on him. He followed Politologue all the way down the hill, didn't challenge him. Even going to the second last, he didn't. He let Politologue lead him over the second last. Nubi Negra got a really good jump. And then Harry went to set about his business. He wasn't brilliant at the last, but he got from A to B. And he seemed to stay pretty well up the hill. I think it was a good performance from Nubi Negra. I felt it raised more question marks about Put the Kettle On, maybe, than it did prove to us that Nubi Negra is a player.
Okay, let's have a look at the impact on the Tingle Creek and the Queen Mother Champion Chase betting. Nubi Negra is a possible for the Tingle Creek. He could also be going, or could instead be going to the Desert Orchid at Kempton over Christmas. And clearly we're looking forward to one of the mighty three from Willie Mullins turning up at the Tingle Creek in a couple of weeks' time, whether that's Shaq and Bessois, Enigamen or Alaho.
Yeah, and that would be a decision from much closer to the day. But if we're going to concentrate on Nubi Negra, I think if you go back to last year's Champion Chase and we pick him up off the home turn, he's in a pocket right in behind. Shaq and Bessois gets a wonderful run through on the inside. Put the Kettle On is on the outside. But if you look at Put the Kettle On to Nubi Negra, it's their jumping at the last two fences was the difference. Nubi Negra didn't miss, but she was very quick and he was close to both. And that's just the look of the draw. If you can, you know, it's where you meet them. You can't decide at 33, 4 miles an hour where you're going to meet the fence. It's what comes up. And if he got a more fluent jump, was longer brave at the last, that's the stride he was on, I think it might have been the difference between winning and losing for him. But it was a steadily run race. And I think a stronger run race possibly suits him.
Yeah, he got into traffic problems, didn't he? And you could see virtually the whole field was still there as they turn for home towards two out in the Champions chase. I mean, that spoke of how steadily run it was. Do you think on the basis of what we saw on Sunday that Harry Skelton will be able to ride Nubia Negra differently because he'll be more confident, won't he, of the horse being able to stay? There was that question mark about the hill about this horse.
Yeah, there was. But I also think what runs in the race is key to it too. And from listening to William Mullins, he's on about riding Shaq and Pourchois more aggressively, which they did at Punchestown. And if you watch the Punchestown race, you see Shaq and Pourchois and Alaho jump out and they go. You see them up to the fence here, first fence in Punchestown. They're lickety split. It's almost like a game of dare. Like, who's going to go the fastest? And neither Rachel Blackmore or Paul Townend pulled back. But by the time they get to the fourth fence in Punchestown, which is only 5 furlongs into the race, Nubia Negra is just about hanging in there. On landing over the fourth, Harry Skelton just gives him a squeeze to make sure he's travelling. And by the time they get around to the fourth last fence, he's hanging in there, Nubia Negra. Now, when they jump the fourth last, Alaho can't go with Shaq and Pourchois. Nubia Negra does try and go with him from the back of the third last, but he ultimately pays the price then. Now, having said that, it was an away game for Nubia Negra. We don't know how he travelled. It was the end of a long season. And he ultimately fades down the straight as Shaq and Pourchois gallops away and Alaho re-rallies. And actually, if you look at Keyless Emery, who's completely outpaced, he runs up onto the back of Nubia Negra, having not tried to follow the fast early fraction. Yeah. So I know people will say, oh, watch Punchestown. Fast gallop didn't suit him. Punchestown can be a funny one. It's an away game for an English horse and it's the end of a long season. Whereas when you look at him in Kempton, that suited him much better.
Yeah, just before we leave Punchestown, I just have my doubts about whether Shaq and Pourchois will be able to replicate those kind of tactics at Cheltenham. I know that they didn't attempt to last year. I just think that kind of race is not going to be what Nubia Negra probably encounters at Cheltenham, I think.
Yeah, I know, yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if Willie is adamant that Shaq and Pourchois goes forward. And then obviously you will have maybe a Rouge Vif, possibly a Politologue, whatever else comes into the equation. But I don't think we'll see a tactical champion chase, providing they get there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Willie Mullins has made that clear. You mentioned Kempton for Nubia Negra. One of his assets, I think, is his jumping, even though you've highlighted that, I mean, Put the Kettle On is very nimble herself, but I think he's very quick and skimming.
He is very quick and skimming, but still when you get deep, you have to get up because your knees have to get over the fence. But, you know, you watched him in Kempton, it was a completely different race, but there was still plenty of pace. He had Goble Citizen, Duke de Geneve, and Rouge Vif. Obviously, he had Altior in there as well. But they did go a good enough gallop. Yet, Nubia Negra over the first and the second, he's the one that's finding a decent gallop the easiest. He's running away. That was earlier in the season for him. And by the time they get around to the third last, he's absolutely galloping over the opposition. And, you know, we kind of thought after that, is he a flat track bully? Well, he's gone and won a Schlur now as well. So he has to be considered.
That's what I mean about, you know, coming out of Kempton. Was that in Harry Skelton's mind about where he positioned him early in the Queen Mother Champion Chase? And of course, it was Altior that he was downing there at Kempton. And he was returning on his first start for 323 days. He'd had a pedal bone fracture. So, you know, he didn't have race fitness on his side as well. So I think we're seeing a horse that's on an upward trajectory, I feel, in Nubia Negra. Yeah. We're best on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose it's good for Spanish breeding as well.
Yeah, absolutely it is. We should mention the looming shadow of Shishkin, because Nubia Negra and Shishkin performed over the same course and distance at Kempton. And they went through their races basically at the same kind of tempo until the home turn, when Shishkin managed to cover that to the line about 2 seconds quicker than Nubia Negra did. And that's an interesting comparison.
It is an interesting comparison, but Nico de Boinville probably never took Shishkin back to not be in front. Whereas Harry Skelton does take Nubia Negra back and hard back on the bridle between the third last and second last, and again and landed at the second last. So Harry may well have run the same fractions had he wished, but he was only winning the race and he takes Nubia Negra back. And visibly you can see Harry slowing Nubia Negra down, whereas you don't ever see Nico slowing Shishkin down.
Yeah, and I also think the seasonal debut point is relevant to Nubia Negra's performance as well. Okay, so that's him. And we think he's, I put him up in the column last week for the Queen Mother Champion Chase. I do think he's a player. Do you think he's a player?
I think he can be a player, yeah, definitely. And a lot will depend on the ground and providing he keeps making the same progress. And it's what we see of Shishkin and Enogramine when they get out into open company. Being the best novice, that's horses' easiest years, novice hurdling, novice chasing. That's their easiest time in their lives. When they win against the open company, it becomes harder for them all.
And it can be different. I mean, Rouge Vif was beating Nuba Negra in the Kingmaker when they were novices. And, you know, look where they are comparatively now. You know, things do change when you move into open company.
Yeah, and progression, age, years. Some horses are what they can be at five. Some horses still keep improving from seven up to eight.
Absolutely. Right. OK, let's move on to the title holder, Put the Kettle On, and we can have we can reprise the conversation that we had throughout the entirety of last season, can't we? Let's start with when she came to prominence. She was outperforming herself when she won the Arkle. I don't think it was expected going into this, and she did it really well, jumping neatly, as we said.
Yeah, look, I don't know. Is there a pattern here or am I looking for a pattern? I'm not sure. But if we watch her in the arc between the second and third fence, she's upsides on the outside in front. Cashback is beside her. Fakir, Dudaris and Notebook, who we thought would go hard that day, have dropped back in behind her. Now, when we roll it on to, that was the Arkle, to the Schlur in 2020, Duke de Geneve and Riders on the Storm are beside her and they take her on. We roll it on to the Champion Chase, or she's bang up there in a steadily run race, in the very same part of the race, second and third, not getting hassled, and she's sitting where she wants to be. And then if you look at her in the very same place, between the second and third fences, in the Schlur last weekend, the pace is on. Politolog has gone clear of her, and she's not holding that same forward position. Now you could argue that's March versus November on two occasions. But if you go to the sixth fence, in the Arkle, she's upsides in front, jumping the sixth fence. You go to the Schlur, which she ends up winning, purely because Duke de Geneve falls in a hole. She can't go with them and she's back in third. That wasn't a taken performance for her. You look at her in last year's Champion Chase, steadily run race, six fence. She's upsides in front again. Whereas you go to the Schlur last weekend, she's completely outpaced and doesn't keep going. I just wonder, does Put the Kettle On need a lull in the middle of the race to be effective at 2 miles? I don't know how she'd have paced. I could have thrown in Leopardstown, but she got badly outpaced as well. People will say, oh, she's a different mare in Cheltenham, so I left Leopardstown one out. But I think if she gets an end-to-end race, she's not as effective at 2 miles.
Now, in our next section, we are using the comments that you made to the question that we asked you via social media. And Ruby, we asked our audience, what would you do with Fakir Dudaris after he won the Clonmel Oil Chase last week? First of all, at One Double Handful says, KG, which I think we all know here on the road is King George, but think his stamina will be stretched. Having said that, I'd never be afraid to aim high, deserves a place in the lineup. If doesn't get home, a firmer ban for the rest of the season can be made. I'm sure JP McManus has got a plan hatched. Darren Butler is saying, try him in the King George as well. If he doesn't stay, plenty of other races to campaign him in. Alex has a different view that he doesn't stay 3 miles, so don't bother. Fake his form for 2 miles reads 1-2-2-2-2. He has the chance of making up to a longer distance horse, but I don't think he's ready for a test like the King George, and the Ryanair looks tougher. I'd go Hillyway, Dublin Chase, Melling, option for the Champion Chase as well. What do you think, Ruby?
I go John Durkin on the 5th of December in Punchestown, grade 1, 2.5 miles. That's where I'd be going next to him if he was mine. If Christmas came too soon, I would wait for the Chase and Ascot, the grade 1 there, of a 2.5. And then you could go probably Ryanair Melling. That's the way I'd go with him. I'd go middle distance. He's a champion at that.
Well, John Mead is saying the Gold Cup because he can't see Fakir Dudaris beating Alaho in the Ryanair. That is hard to see based on last season, is it? I mean, just Fakir Dudaris just picked at the pieces in second. He, like everybody else, could not live with Alaho.
You are, but you're basing that on obviously both absolutely getting there. These are jump horses. So I would be looking at the immediate targets and worrying about the long-term target when everybody else is alive and well.
Daniel Hall will be hoping that Joseph O'Brien is familiar with the programme book in Britain in obscure ways to get to the Cheltenham Festival. He says, Lexus at Christmas, keep up, Daniel, it's the Sands Chase. Then Linkfield Conditions Chase to the Ryanair. Unusual? It's unusual.
Doubt he'll be going there.
LP says Champion Hurdle. Sounds wacky, but Fakir has good 2 mile hurdle form around Cheltenham. And with the Champion Hurdle division really weak, there's worse surprise entries out there.
Yeah, there is, but I'll be surprised.
And finally, from James Gubb, we have a misty-eyed reminder of how we used to campaign horses. He says, if I had the choice,
Labro Trophy,
I would take the Quarto Star route of the 06-07 season, Tingle Creek, King George, race in Feb, then on to Gold Cup.
Could do that too.
So how impressed were you with Fakadudares? I thought it was a really good start to his season. He brushed away horses that should have put up more of a fight than that.
I thought, Lydia, it was the difference between grade one horses and a grade one horse and actual grade two, grade three horses, most likely. Easy game, Royal Run, who, hard line. When you throw in a grade one horse with them, that's when you see the gulf. And that probably where the gulf in ratings irks me most.
I don't think it's such a packed show. Do we have time to segue into
handicap? That's where it is.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where it comes from.
How about a couple of horses? Well, one that's hoping to make up to a grade one winner and another that's looking to try and transform his grade one winning form into open company. Midnight Shadow, who won the Paddy Power Gold Cup, and Protectorat, who was second. They're going King George with Midnight Shadow. They're going either the Many Clouds, which is a group, a grade two at Aintree over 3 mile wall, or Savills Chase grade one over Christmas with Protectorat.
Yeah, Protectorat made a mistake early in the home straight on the first circuit, but he had loads of time to get back into it, and to me looked outpaced, whereas Midnight Shadow, your eye was always drawn to him. He had the pace to go with Cool Cody early. He was able to sit in a really good position, and regardless of Cool Cody's fall, I think he was going to win. Like, his mistake at the last, and then he got idle in front, I think allowed Protectorat and one or two more, Lawler, Layla even, to chase him down, but I think he was a really good winner, and he reminded me in a way of Exotic Dancer. He just travelled that well, he jumped really well, and I thought it was a really good performance.
Yes, so did I, and that really does bode well for Kempton and the King George, doesn't it? Being able to jump at that speed and stay there, because that's what you need.
Yeah, to be able to go forwards from the start and over the first two fences in Kempton, he'd be able to get himself a really good position, because he was arguably travelling the easiest over the first couple in Cheltenham the other day. Mm.
They both got to prove that they stay 3 miles, but it was a really good start to Midnight Shadow and Protectorat season. We look forward to seeing what they're doing the rest of the season. Let's move on to the staying hurdle division, shall we? Last week, Ruby analysed the fall of the title holder at Cheltenham, Flooring Porter, who was so progressive over this trip last season. There might be a new pretender on the scene, mightn't there, Ruby?
Yeah, there might be. And look, a lot of people were kind of looking at him before he ran on Saturday. And it is, of course, Sporting John. And he was good on Saturday, Lydia. And he does, I think, what staying hurdle horses need to do. The opposite of what Flory Porter does. But it's definitely easier. Sizing John would be an easier horse to ride. And if we pick him up here after he started on Saturday, running downhill to the first hurdle, if you look at Tom O'Brien's hands, Sporting John doesn't stiffen the rein. He goes to the first hurdle, has a look and pops over it. But it's that style of racing behind the bridle that's really, really efficient. If you go on a full circuit to the very same hurdle, he's still lobbing away at the same pace. He hasn't come alive. He's not over racing. We pick him up at the fourth last. He's still lobbing away there, jumps the fourth last big. And Tom, he's a loop in the rain and then turning in. If you just look at Tom O'Brien's body language compared to Paddy Brennan's in the black horse, Tom O'Brien's only going through the motions. And he rides away down to the last hurdle on Sizing John, allows him to slow down and pop it. Paddy Brennan is flat out in the black on his outside. And then when Tom really drops his rear end in the saddle and sets about Sizing John, he starts to quicken from the back of the last. And in a short space of time, puts a nice distance between himself and the rest. He's a lot to improve, but he does things right. And I got the impression watching him on Saturday, there was still plenty under the bonnet.
Yeah, so did I. And I think the runner-up on A Gathering Storm is no slouch as well. I mean, he remains of interest in handicap hurdles, whereas I think Sporting John can move beyond that. Afterwards, I spoke to trainer Philip Hobbs, who is genuinely open-minded about whether they stick to hurdles this season or whether they go back over fences. I really liked his technique over hurdles. What would you do?
I think I'd be staying there. He hasn't looked a natural over fences at any stage. Now, I know he's a Scilly Isles winner.
Should we look at that? Because Philip brought that up at the weekend. And, you know, that is a race that needs some unpicking.
It does. And they went hard up front on really testing ground in Sandown. And I think this is a race that others lost. You know, of course you can get lucky. Big Bucks won a grand novice chase in Aintree, but it doesn't mean he was a chaser. you know, and look, I'm not saying Sporting John is big bucks, but no, I didn't think there was anything about this race in Sandown that you thought there's a future Gold Cup horse.
No, because he's detached and slow early on, and the race is being conducted at such a hard pace. And in the end, he sort of just grimly hangs on in there. And then you can see him inexorably making progress against Shan Blue. But even at the last, he puts in a safety stride, doesn't he? Whereas Shan Blue, who deserves to be very tired indeed at this point in the pace that he's gone in that kind of ground, actually goes for it. And I think you see there, to me, the difference between a horse who's careful at fences and a horse that is a natural born chaser.
Yeah, one that attacks and one that jumps. And even the fact that we can have this whole conversation and this race hasn't even finished just tells you how slow it will go.
And so if we look at the arc of what happened after that with Sporting John, so he's a Grade 1 winner as a result of basically mugging Shan Blue in the Scilly Isles. He then moves on to the Brand Advisory Novices Chase, and that doesn't end particularly happily.
No, it doesn't. And he's jumping again, wasn't great. Made a mistake at the 11th. Made a terrible mistake at the second last, but no, I think that was quicker ground, obviously stronger gallop, and he never landed a blow. I just think fences get into Sporting John's way, and when he sees them coming, he just starts slowing down.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he went on to Aintree and he makes a mistake at the second. And Tom O'Brien, who was riding for the first time that day, reported afterwards that the horse seemed to lose his confidence afterwards. So, I mean, I feel like we're building up a case here that he is a much better hurdler than he is chaser. And, you know, there's plenty of time to go back over fences if you want to. And I think this is the division for him this season.
Yeah, look, you should never say never, obviously. But confidence does seem to be a key factor for Sporting John. And he seemed to get confidence in Cheltenham on Saturday. Whereas you watch his chasing career, even that run in Aintree, the further he was going, the less confident he looked.
He's still available at a big price for the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle. If you're interested, I think he could develop into a player. Obviously, there is the warning that he might not end up going there. That's to Philip Hobbs, JP McManus and Frank Berry. Now we're going to talk about novice chasing again. And our way into this is a poll that we asked you on the social media channels of Racing TV. We got well over 1,000 votes. Let's make it 2,000 next time, guys. 2,000. Let's go for the 2,000. The question that we asked, Ruby, was which novice chaser impressed you most this weekend? Was it A, Third Time Lucky, B, Riviere de Tell, or C, Something Else? And we asked them to come forward with the C, Something Else, if they had a different answer. So who would you give your vote to?
I would probably have given my vote to French Dynamite at Punchestown, to tell you the truth. That would have been my one. I thought he was really impressive in a strongly run race. But there was none of them not impressive. Of those horses you picked out, Riviere de Tell, getting huge weight allowance, Third Time Lucky looks very pacey. My draw goes well. I thought he was going to win well and beat you in alignment. 300 through 5, he might have been a little bit lucky. Obviously, the horse that fell was travelling well behind him, Oscar Elite. But I didn't see too many bad performances from novice chasers last weekend.
Okay, well, the audience voted for Third Time Lucky, who got a whopping 56.4% of the vote. Your Something Else got 10.9%. And the one I'd go for, Riviere de Tell, got 32.7%. Let's unpick some of the horses that we've just mentioned there. We'll start with Third Time Lucky, and I'll pick up your comments about other horses that we should mention as we go through them. Right, Ruby, your view about what Third Time Lucky did here.
Third Time Lucky is good, but Third Time Lucky is a very pacey horse. He always wants to be going faster in the early mid part of this race. Jumps the first really well and the second, and top captain Tomcat is trying to make it for him. But when you wheel it around the bend to the sixth fence and Captain Tomcat jumps it, watch Harry Skelton has to pull Third Time Lucky back to keep him behind Captain Tomcat, and he can't by the eighth fence. Third Time Lucky pings by him and he's always in front then. He gets good and short at the ninth, and then Harry sets about him going to the last ditch, the tenth, and he absolutely flies it. Now, if you watch the speedometer off the top of the hill here in Cheltenham, he's doing 38 miles an hour as he descends to the third last fence. It slows ever so slightly to about considerably for a racehorse, to 35 miles an hour at three out. Round the bend to the second last, Harry slows him right down to just over 30 miles an hour, jumps the second last, and he goes on home. But he's a horse with pace. He's a horse that will inject a lot of early and mid-race pace into a race, and then it'll be a case of if you can catch him or if you can't.
Yeah, for me, it's a performance still full of a great deal of promise, but he needs to put it in the right order because he was slowing down in the closing stages. And, you know, he needs to, I feel there's a big performance in there if the race just pans out to suit him and allows him to express himself.
Yeah, but some horses, Lydia, can race that way around. I'd say third time lucky, has a huge cruising speed and pace rather than a finishing burst. And his way of racing might be try and stay with me and catch me if you can.
So if there is something that can hang on in there and finishes more strongly, he might be vulnerable later on in your view.
Yeah, he will, but you want a fast horse to keep up with him.
Yeah, agreed. Right, okay, let's have a look at Riviere d'Etel. And she won a Grade 2 novice chase at Punchestown on Saturday. She beat Cape Gentleman by 21 lengths and embittered a further 8 lengths behind.
Yeah, look, obviously got the 4-year-old allowance and the filly's allowance, so she was getting £18 from Cape Gentleman. But look, they went at it early in this race, down to the first fence, Cape Gentleman, embittered, and Riviere d'Etel, all go to the first. But by the time they get to the fourth, she's completely in control of it. Down to the seventh fence, then Cape Gentleman. He's not letting her have it easy. Cape Gentleman is starting to press up beside her. She makes a slight mistake at the eighth and thinking, 4-year-old filly, what's she going to do now? But she goes and attacks the ninth. And that's always good to see with a chaser. Round up to the 11th fence, jumps the 11th, which is the third last. And she just scoots clear off the bend. And with the time to get to the last fence, big jump on the Dennis O'Regan, but she's a mile clear. It's a really good performance. She's brave. She's forward going. And she'll be entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed by this. Of course, the thing to bear in mind, if you're thinking that she might contest the Arkell next March, and obviously there's plenty of stuff to do in between, but that age allowance will not exist there. She'll only be getting her mare's allowance. So £11 extra on her back. I mean, she'd have still have won here, wouldn't she? It's a different thing, isn't it, come March?
It is, but she'll also be 5 by March, and she is allowed to improve through the winter physically. So I guess that's why the weight allowance disappears. But she will, and she in theory should be stronger by March than she is now.
Okay, let's go up in trip to 3 under through 5 winning at Cheltenham, and a really quite good start. Well, it was a great start until what happened to Oscar Elite, his chasing career. Now, 3 under through 5 had experience, but Oscar Elite was making his chase debut.
Yeah, and Oscar Elite did very little wrong, but 3 under through 5 seemed to put that experience to good use. He's a good cut at the first, and he jumps it really well, and again at the fifth. Now, does he know in the blue and white, Oscar Elite down the inside under Brendan Powell and Streets of Dione in the light blue and navy, I think it is. But, you know, 3 under through 5 at the 8th, good jump. Again at the 10th, a really, really good jump. At the 14th, he's only all right at it, 3 under through 5, but he's all the time stretching the horses behind him. 4th last, the last ditch, big jump from 3 under through 5, gets him a couple of lengths, and then down to 3 out. Oscar Elite is the one your eye is drawn to, but the racing now, 3 under through 5 with the experience, gets the jump, whereas Brendan Powell asks Oscar Elite for one, he doesn't pick up, and he takes a fall. And with time to get to the last, 3 under through 5 just keeps going better than the rest.
Yes, they're talking about the Welsh National for 3 under through 5. What do you think of that?
Yeah, he looks like a horse that wants a trip, but big ask, hard race for a novice. It's a really tough race, that Welsh National. So fair play to them, but it's a big ask.
But Oscar Elite, I mean, provided that he doesn't suffer any ill effects about from his fall, he looked as though he was shaping perhaps the best there. It's a long way out to say he would have won, but I think he certainly would have been involved. Our very own James Millman, he's voted in the poll, and he went for see something else and put up Oscar Elite.
Yeah, and I could understand that. He looked to be travelling really, really well, and the Tizard horses are back in good form. They're having a really good run with Brendan Powell. There will be bumps along the way, but I thought that was a good, he was definitely the horse you were thinking, wow, what's that?
Yeah.
That's the one you want to be on.
Yeah, agreed. David Harvey voted for See Something Else as well, and his vote went to Vanillier. He said that the horse built on the promise of what looks a pretty hot debut form, jumped well, stayed on strongly, proving himself a likely contender for the top novice staying chases. What did you think, Ruby?
Yeah, Vanillier was good. Obviously, bulked out to be really handily ridden in this race. If there was one minus to it, we did see him jumping a fraction to his left. He just jumped out to his left at the eighth fence. And obviously, he did again at the fourth last, which he can't show you. And then he got up to the third last, and Ballyshannon Rose jumps by him. But Vanillier quickly reasserts, gets back up to Ballyshannon Rose, the two out, and he stays strongly. We know he's going to stay. He's an Albert Barclay winner. This was 2 miles and 6. I was impressed with his jumping in Down Royal. His jumping was equally sound here, albeit a little bit to the left. And he's definitely an RS. Is it RSA still?
It's the Festival Novices. It used to be the RSA last year.
Festival Novices. Yeah. I'll keep up. The Festival Novices, yes. But, you know, and he is a great one-winning horse who looks to be taking the chasing really well.
But the one you nominated for your C, there was French Dynamite. Why was that?
I just loved what he did. I know it's a beginner's chase and people will say, oh, it wasn't competitive, but Alco Rouge jumps out in front of him. And by the time we get to the second fence, you can see Alco Rouge and French Dynamite are considerably well clear of the remainder. Now, as they go to the fifth fence, French Dynamite jumps beside Alco Rouge. And when they get to the sixth, he jumps by him. And French Dynamite is in control and shortens up at the seventh fence. But if you keep watching in the back of your shot, is that third or the fourth last? That's Alco Rouge pulling up. So the only horse that went with French Dynamite only got a circuit. The rest of them couldn't go to gallop. And I know Duke Cup's not a bad horse behind that finished the second of my father's. Down to the second last, French Dynamite jumps it well and starts to quicken away. Pings the last and opens the distance all the way from the back of the last fence. He went a much stronger gallop and set way different fractions to all those behind him. He was a novice hurdler at lost his way a bit last year, but he's the stamp of a chaser. And he's improved a hell of a lot for his first run. And I thought that was taken.
Okay. I have one more to throw at you. Again, this is from the correspondent who voted C, something else. Lloyd Murphy put forward Magic Days, ran a cracker in the Mayor's Novice last year, and fences seem to be the making of her. One for the Mayor's Chase for sure. And Anne-Marie Duffer said she did, but gin on lime going there, Henry said. What did you make of Magic Days?
What did I make of Magic Days? I was slightly disappointed with her in Galway. I thought Cork suited her much better. She showed the benefit of the run, jumped soundly, and won an absolute canter. You'll see her here from the back of the last in Cork. She's in a league of her own. But there was a great Mayor's Novice Chase programme in Ireland, and that will heat up in the next couple of weeks. And we'll have a clearer view of Magic Days. Is Magic Days the number one, or is there a few more that could put it up to her? I know Gin on Lime, Henry has nominated Gin on Lime, but I wasn't at all impressed with her in Cheltenham the other day. I thought she jumped very much out to her right. And Magic Days could be the one.
Yeah, they seem to be suggesting that they might be giving her a break and coming back at the end of spring. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just that she needed a break over the winter period. Both Henry and Rachel thought she was, you know, like you, a bit below par. Even before what happened, you know, the mistake at the second last. Anyway, those are our thoughts of the novice chases. And it's a division that we'll be keeping a very close eye on every week. Right, let's have a look at the novice hurdlers, shall we? We've got a couple of nominations ourselves, and Ride Out Racing has got one for us too. Let's start with the ones that we picked out, Ruby. I Like to Move It, who didn't have many to beat at Cheltenham, but you felt there were reasons to think that he can do better.
I do, because I don't think he's a natural front runner, yet he had to go and make the running when neither Washington or Picard wanted to. Watch him at the first, he's quite high and a little bit deliberate. The second, he jumps well. But when you get around the corner to the fourth hurdle, he really jams on and has a look at the fourth hurdle. And, you know, he's just typical of a horse that didn't really want to be in front. He was better at three out, same at the second last, but it's a little bit high. Gets the jump at the last when they're starting to sprint. And I think he's a horse that won in spite of the way the race was run. And that's always a good sign.
I suspected that we might see him in the Betfair Hurdle because the Tristan Davis team like to send a novice there. It's a well-worn track for them, and that is what they're thinking of.
Yeah,
lead there.
Yeah, not sure. But that's what, look, it's a big pot, and, you know, he looks steady the way he jumps like a horse that could be a cracking novice chaser next year too.
And how about Blazing Cal? And in particular, what trip do you think he's going to excel over?
Oh, the Albert Bartlett, 3 miles. I think the way he races, it's made from even the way he jumps and goes through a race. You watch him at the fourth hurdle, he's a bit slow, and Donny McInerney has to nudge him away from it again at the fifth hurdle. And even at the fourth last, he's quite high, where you'd like to see him slicker through the air. But watch him off the home turn. he's only starting to get going, and up to the last hurdle, he jumps to his left and jumps into the horse Harry Cobden is riding, but he pulls it out from there home. He's just behind the bridle. He's lethargic looking, yet every time Donny McInerney wanted something, there seemed to be a response, and that's the kind of horse I like at Threads.
Yeah, I'm totally with you about that. Rideout Racing is putting forward No Ordinary Joe to us, third in the Great Wood Hurdle as a novice, by being seriously keen.
Yeah, good observation. We watch him down over the first hurdle, and even more so going to the second. Nico de Bonneville is trying to get him back. I doubt very much his plan was to make the running, but there wasn't a whole lot of pace, and he ended up just over racing. That said, now off the home turn up to the last, if he was going to be a supreme horse, should he have found a bit more? Possibly.
Okay. Well, that is very much a inchoate division, I think. You know, because of the weather we mentioned at the start of the show, there are loads of novice hurdlers that we haven't yet seen. So we'll keep an eye on it. We're going to move on to more established hurdlers now. Now, last week we were talking about the 2 mile championship division over hurdles, and we were wondering whether Echoes in Rain might make up in her second season to that kind of horse. Well, she started off at the weekend, and she was up against Zanahir, who was race fit Ruby, and a certain Charger, a 4 times grade one winning hurdler who's twice been runner up in the champion hurdle.
Yeah, and look, it was definitely a tactical race, Lydia. We can pick it up at the start. Zanahir under Davy Russell elects to make it. Patrick Mullen sits second, and Echoes in Rain sits into the box seat in third. But by the time she runs around the first bend, she's already getting a bit keen. But if we skip it on up to the top of the hill to the second hurdle, and Echoes in Rain is really wanting to go forward, and she gallops at the second hurdle and lands up on the back of Zanahir in front of her, down to the third hurdle, and she does the very same thing. She's racing back to front, whereas Zanahir and Sharjah, they're playing cat and mouse and are lobbing along, and this race is going to be a sprint. By the time they get to the fourth, she has a grab at it, and it just went the wrong way from her, but she still gets beat way too far. There's no doubt about that. But from the second last home, it's turned into a sprint. Zanahir jumps it, and Patrick Mullins is waiting for Davy Russell to go. Davy gets round the bend. He goes on Zanahir, but Sharjah always has the gears of him. And the closer they're getting to the last, the more you know Sharjah's going to win. He flies it and goes away to win well. Zanahir finishes second. Echoes in Rain, who did everything wrong, to me, got beaten further than she should have for doing everything wrong if she was going to be a grade one horse.
Yeah. Sharjah, I mean, people often say about horse X doesn't get the credit they deserve, and I usually roll my eyes. But in Sharjah's case, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He's a very, very good horse. He's got a wonderful technique. Zanahir and Echoes in Rain, you don't think are either of them going to make the grade?
I don't know. It is hard for Zanahir in the year he's in, 4 into 5. It's a tricky, tricky year. He could be a better horse by the spring, but Echoes in Rain really has to learn to settle. Now, a really strong gallop might suit her. Her best performance was at Fairy House off a really strong gallop. But I was disappointed. I thought she would show a bit more than she did.
And will Sharjah try to win a fourth Matheson hurdle?
I'd say unless Leopardstown is called off or something happens to Sharjah.
Now, how about Epitome? We have seen her back, but only in galloping action at that gallops morning at Newbury for their Ladbrokes Winter Carnival. She's had surgery on her back, which goes some way, surely, doesn't it, to explain why she wasn't jumping very well. This was a mare that 2 seasons ago was noted for how fluid her jumping was.
Yeah, it will. But I also noted the comment from Nicky Henderson that she hasn't been schooled yet. So until she's schooled, you don't know if the operation has worked. So it's a watch and brief.
Yeah, he said, I intentionally haven't schooled her. She will need a school, but we need rain. Hence coming back to the thing we started at the top of the show with. So that is the developing 2 mile hurdle division. Things really hotting up very soon with the Fighting Fifth and the Hatton's Grace next week. Now it's time for the Analyse This section, and I bet you can probably guess what we're focusing on. It's that incident last Friday at 2 out where my Drogo fell, and Gin Online, having made what seemed to be the worst error, was able to get up and carry on because Rachel Blackmore's boot never touched the ground and she was able to complete the race alone. Ruby.
I'm going to try and analyse why a horse who doesn't make an apparent mistake did fall. And if we look at my Drogo, you watch him at the first fence, second fence, it's beautiful, really clean jumping. We watch him at the second last, first time round where he's doing sort of 31 miles an hour and he jumps it well, but it's non-competitive. It's only when it gets up to being competitive that something goes wrong. So if you look at him coming down the tree out, he's doing 32, 33 miles an hour, no problem. But then it gets competitive. Joins Gina Lime off the bend. And if we flick to the head-on shot, look for my Drogo's knees. His knees part the birch. And that's the issue. He stood in the right place. He didn't get quite enough height. And when his knees part the birch, it means his hind end flicks too high. So therefore, his body weight is going forward. As his off four touches the ground, his near four follows it down. But his off four then can't get out to keep himself balanced. He only gets his toe out, which means he crumples, and his near four or left leg slithers off, and down he goes. Now, Harry Skelton has gone with him because from the takeoff side, this horse isn't making a mistake. Any horse that parts the birch with their shins or hoofs will get away with it. But when their knees catch it, it means it flicks them up behind. Now, to show the counter of that, we'll show Cool Cody. Watch him at the second last, first time around, at 30 miles an hour, where he parts the birch with his knees. But it's uncompetitive, and Adam Wedge is in control. So he gets away with it. Second time around, where he's up to almost 33 miles an hour, and he gets in a bit deep, Cool Cody, hits it with his knees, same thing happens. It flips over. It was speed for Cool Cody. For my Drogo, he was just getting a fraction low, and it's only his knees that stalled him in the air. That's the reason he fell.
And we should stress that both horses are okay. Their connections have posted videos of them on social media. Do you think my Drogo is going to learn from that? Could it go either way for him?
I think he'll learn because he jumped so well all the way. It was just the lack of elevation. He hurdled, and you can wrap a top bar of a hurdle with your knee because you never get that high in the air. Whereas with a steeplechase fence, with the extra height, when you catch it with your knees, it pitches your hind end up, and then gravity puts you in the wrong place for landing. But look, it didn't look like a mistake. And even in the commentary, you can hear the commentator saying, my Drogo jumps it, and all of a sudden he's gone because there is no obvious mistake to the eye.
Yeah, okay. I have two questions for you. The first of them, did Rachel Blackmore do the right thing on Gin Online? Because the steward said afterwards, they advised her that in similar circumstances, she should take more time to assess her mount.
I think she did because she went into a trot, into a canter, and she had well over 100 yards to get a feel. So yeah, I would trust her judgment.
Yeah, well, I think she did the right things because she didn't break any rules. She's riding to the rules. My second question is about the second last. That is the trickiest fence on the old course. Cheltenham have tried various sightings of it before the home turn, after the home turn. What do you think about this? And you've gone back in the history books, haven't you?
You can go back. And I suppose Lad Lomley is a famous one. You see him thundering down here in the champion chase. He goes Seaball on his inside. I can't highlight other people that highlight myself, so we'll roll to the Arkle and Twist Magic and Don't Push It down to the second last. My Way to Sol's in the middle, both of those turn over. Yeah, there was plenty of fallers where it was before. There's still fallers where it is now, but you have to factor that into your riding, and it is a fence that comes shortly off the bend, and speed seems to be the common denominator. When Cool Cody got up in speed, when my Drogo got up only by 1 mile an hour, but into competitive racing, that fence becomes tricky. So you have to factor into your head and the way you ride it that the winning post is another 2 furlongs up the straight.
What would you say to those people who would say that that fence should be taken out? Now, I know that would cause problems because it would mean that you've got one fence too few in terms of minimum regulations for number of fences for a 2 mile chase. But what impact would that actually have on the race?
I think you run the risk of seeing worse falls at the last fence because you will increase the speed from the back of the third last. All of a sudden, if you have 3 furlongs without a fence, everybody will rev up and go. And who can get away? And all of a sudden, you'll end up with tireder horses getting to the last fence. And that you don't want to see. What we're seeing is horses taking hurdly type falls, catching the top and dribbling out. They seem to be the same sort of fall all the time. But that's not that you want to see any horse falling, but it's easier to watch that than tired horses somersault.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ruby. Thanks for all of your comments during the course of this show. We're looking forward to a good weekend here in Britain. We've got the Betfair Chase. We've got the Chanel Farmer 1965 Chase Grade 2 at Ascot. Is it relatively quiet compared to that in Ireland this weekend?
Yeah, it is. Goran Park, a couple of decent maiden hurdles, maybe a good beginner's chase. Same in Avonmore, the Triton Handicap Chase is a feature, but next weekend is a much bigger weekend in Ireland.
Well, nonetheless, there will be plenty to analyse when we see you all this time next week. Goodbye.